Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. As ever, it's always a delight to share with you the interviews of the inspiring women we interview each week. Now, I know you've been doing it, so but please keep on subscribing, reviewing, and rating the show on iTunes or the whatever podcast platform you actually use. Now, this week, we are in conversation with Karen Thorpe Reed. Karen is a serial entrepreneur, a master change practitioner, mentor, business leader, speaker, visionary consultant, mother, and wife. And through her work, Karen embodies the motto of keeping people at the heart of change. As managing director of her own company, Premier Change Consulting, she possesses many years of experience in business strategy and corporate leadership. She brings expertise in leadership development, culture and behavioral change, having led teams, advised and coached clients on a number of large technology and cultural change related transformation programs across a variety of industries. Now, I'd ask you to pay attention to this week's recording. We did have some challenges with the quality, but what Karen brings and talks about is very inspiring. So this week, ladies, I am joined by Karen Thorpe Reed. Now, Karen, I would have done a short bio at the beginning of the show, but I wonder if you can tell us and the listeners a little bit more about yourself, your humble beginnings, and where you come from, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just to say, in terms of where I come from, I'm originally from West London. I was raised there until probably about 5 years old. I then moved to the Caribbean and moved to Barbados and spent a couple of years there. And I won't give you too many of the stories back and forth, but I have been to 3 primary schools, 3 secondary schools, 2 colleges and 3 universities.
Wow.
So that will kind of tell you the kind of extension of the amount of travel.
Right.
My mum wasn't in the army. That says a lot.
Yes.
Military background. It just was about life and what my mum chose to do. In terms of background, I don't have I didn't until last year have a degree.
And, okay.
Last year I chose to do my master's and I graduated at the ending of December.
Well done, congratulations.
Thank you. And that was actually 20 years after the first time I went to university and took a year out.
Okay.
So I got my master's with commendation, and I took that time out and had my son.
Okay.
So my son was there with me at my graduation.
Lovely, lovely. So what was the driver between going back to university after such a long break?
I had always wanted to do it. I think it was a very personal goal.
Right.
When you're younger and you're going to university, sometimes it's about your parents.
Yes.
About what want you to do, and they want to make sure you've got a good sort of foundation and grounding.
Yeah.
And like any teenager, I chose to be slightly a little bit rebellious around that. And I think when my dad had said to me when I was going into my second year that, you know, you've got to make sure you do well because I'm paying for you and all that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be held to account by anyone for what they were doing for me, as much as I love my parents.
Yes.
And I took the time out. I got pregnant with my son when I was actually traveling back and forth to the States. My boyfriend was in the States at the time.
Okay.
And had my son and then chose to go to the States for a while. So I was in New York for a while.
Right.
I then, when that didn't work out, I came back to the UK. And when I came back to the UK, I came back as quite a frightened, at the time, maybe 24-year-old. Oh, no, she was 24 years old then.
Right.
And a little nervous because at that stage, you know, all I had was my A-levels. I didn't have anything else.
Yeah.
And, I started doing some temping work and then led into an organisation, which was the telecommunications company at the time, which was really large in Australia but very small in the UK. And I had the opportunity to then work in all of the different departments throughout the organisation. And within the space of about 18 months, I became the troubleshooting manager for Europe.
Right, right.
Team of engineers. And this was me without a degree, but with a team who all had degrees.
Yes.
They took the risk on me because what they saw in terms of the skills was the ability to lead a team and not manage, because I don't think I'm a very good
leader. Okay.
I think in terms of leading and getting that vision and people to follow you is one of the things that, as my mum says, if there's anything that you need to pay your dad for genetically, it's your ability to lead and to speak.
Great. Now that gives me so much to kind of like, I'm jotting the notes down here from the things you're saying. So the first thing I want to kind of pick on, you talked about obviously being in Barbados and the Caribbean. So you know how much education is prized in the Caribbean. Yet you went on to have a really successful career or to start a really successful career without academia. What would you say would be, if you were to go back, would you say there'd been any advantage for you doing for doing a university degree, or what's your view on that?
So I think it's different for different people. I think if you are a driven and natural risk taker, then a degree isn't something that you absolutely need.
Right.
But I think if you are less motivated,
yeah,
and I've always been very confident about the person that I am.
Right.
Taking a lot of risks. You know, first opportunities around risk have been, you know, going into an organisation where I started off as a receptionist, but ended up being their marketing manager because I was prepared to put myself out there.
Yeah.
So I think there is something to be said about there is an ease of opening the doors for the degree.
Yes, very much. Yes, yes.
Because you have a degree.
Yeah.
I've encouraged my son to do that. He's in his second year of university now. So I
right.
I think there is an advantage to opening doors in that respect, if that's the choice that you want to do.
Yeah.
So if I had to do it again, I think I would have chosen a different degree.
Right.
What has happened is when I'd gone in for it, I hadn't achieved. I didn't get into the university I wanted to.
Okay.
So I had then chosen one of a different course, which wasn't the right one for me.
Right, right.
I think, you know, if any advice I'd give to anyone, choose something that you are passionate about.
Yeah.
Something that you can close your eyes and see yourself successful with in the future.
Right, right, right.
I have seen, I'm not sure about your own experiences, you know, I've interviewed lots of people in the past and look on their CVs and they do have degrees, and quite often they're not doing the job that relates to their CV. The advantage, to your degree, so what it does give you, it for an employer looking at you, it allows them to see that you have the ability to start and complete them.
Right.
I think that's what it shows.
Okay.
Commitment to doing something and then seeing whether or not, and I would ask the questions, I don't ask the questions, what did you get in your final degree? I asked, what did you get in your first year?
Right, right.
Because that shows whether, you know, what level of commitment you had to doing this and the purpose and the passion behind it.
Yeah.
I think that's probably my
excellent. And I agree with you because I took all my degrees as a mature student and a mother of two and a divorcee by then, you know, and I think for me, one of the things it did, well, first of all, I suppose I came from a slightly different era where it was, I was first generation immigrant coming, you know, in the UK. So getting a job was highly prized because that's what that's what was known then. So going to university was almost a very much a luxury from that degree. But I think what it did do for me, taking it as a mature student, is that, like you say, I actually knew what I wanted to do then, because I wanted it more to complement the direction I was going in. Because I do think it's difficult as a 13, 14 year old, when you're choosing those subjects that are almost going to dictate the rest of your life, you know, so it is a difficult thing. So, okay. And the second thing you said was that you didn't go to manage, you went to lead, you were the leader. So what's the difference for you between management or being a manager versus being a leader?
Management for me is kind of technical. It's following the process. It's making sure that you do all the HR elements of things. It's understanding the process of whatever your particular discipline is.
Yes.
And managing your team through those steps and making sure that the governance is in place to achieve various different milestones of whatever it is you do as a discipline. I think leadership allows someone to really get a vision and a feel of how things are. It's about the culture that you embed within your team.
Yeah.
People want to do it quite often, and I think sometimes it's been a risk for a lot of organisations that I go into and work as an interim or consultant. Because they say, well, when you leave, people continue to do what it is.
Yeah.
And I've managed to build in a skill into that. So there's a combination of the leadership, but then what you leave behind is people with an absolute passion and vision.
Right.
The vision that you've put in front of them.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Now, I think I know we digressed a little bit early on because you gave me such great answers. So tell us a little bit about your current career choice and what the motivator was behind that.
So I work for myself. I have four companies now.
Okay.
And I've worked as in, for many years as an interim. I've been working as an interim consultant for about 12 or 13 years.
Okay.
One of the things that I wanted to do is, I'm a very bad employee.
In what respects?
Because I think, you know, I, when I work within organisations, I manage politics well because I have to.
Yeah.
But if I have a choice, it's not one of the things that I feel is the most productive.
Okay.
So one of the things that I wanted to do was to expand my skills and what I'm doing and become more of having a consultancy and
being
able to do knowledge share and also to make a difference in terms of both my clients as well as the mentoring stuff that I do as well.
Right.
So Premier Change Consulting is my core business.
Okay.
We do business transformation, project and program management for a variety of large organizations and small organizations as well. So we have some big companies in both pharmaceutical as well as in sort of the transportation industries. Yeah, everything else in between. So that's kind of my core thing, and you know, so we have a team of around about 25 who work on various different projects. Then I have the FlexiBench, which is my online platform, which connects freelancers and businesses so that they can work together.
Right.
And it also allows businesses to connect with other businesses so they can bid for larger contracts.
Okay.
Meet, you know, different skills, etc. So that's a relatively new business which we launched last year in August.
Okay.
Launched that in August, and in September I launched another business with my son. So my son's first foray out into the entrepreneurial environment.
Right.
So we have a soft play center in Barbados.
Right. Okay.
Which is it's a small operation at the moment. We wanted to prove the concept first. So we do birthday parties as well as normal play sessions. And it's been, you know, in terms of growth, it's probably been about 600% since we opened. It's been phenomenal. So that's been really great. So that's been another side of the business. And then I have Premier Angels, which is we started off focusing on women.
In terms
the 7-year plan, we call it.
Okay.
So, writing a book called The 7-Year Plan at the moment, and it's really about taking your life and putting some milestones in, mm-hmm. and then having something, goals to aspire to.
Yes.
Something about having a dream and realizing that dream. And quite often people knock down people's dreams and think that they're too far ahead, or you should have a station in life and that's where you were born and that's where you should stay. I've lost a lot of friends over the years because they, you know, I didn't go into too much detail in terms of background.
Yeah.
Anyone that kind of know West London, it's got a mix of both wealthy and poverty.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different experiences around, and you have some people who've chosen to use their skills in not necessarily the most positive way, and others
okay.
choose, you know, to build on that and do it, you know, do things very positively. My parents, in terms of where they're from, my dad was born in the UK, family from Sierra Leone, and my father was a lithographer, which is a type of printer.
Yeah.
And my mother started off working within sort of the secretarial sort of fields. And one of the things that's quite interesting, my mum did her degree at 60, and she graduated with my sister.
Excellent.
We didn't have the, you know, so I can go back. So I refer back to what you were saying before. One of the things when our parents kind of immigrated to the UK, to get a job, and my grandparents came over first, and they were, you know, my grandmother was a nurse, my grandfather was some London Transport. Very much the mix. And prior to that, you know, we would have had maids, and before that, we'd been slaves in the family.
Yeah.
What's notable for our family, and my mum, you know, was studying sociology, and she's now qualified as a social worker. But one of the things that she said, you know, there is a theory in sociology around how each generation works to build for the previous generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not all families do that. Some families, there you will see the replication of what has happened in that generation just follows through. But for our family, we've moved from, you know, slaves and may right through to the professionalism. Now, you know, being an entrepreneur, business owner, you know, holding my master's degree. My son is now going to be third generation graduate. So, you know, we've done quite in a relatively short period
of time. Yes.
So in terms of choices and where I am, I think I've chosen to be in a position where I wanted to be empowered, where I could work when I wanted to work, where I want to work.
Yeah.
I probably take a holiday every month.
I like it. I like its style.
Everybody that knows me knows it's my absolute vice.
Yes.
And I could see you nodding when I talked about the, you know, the friends that you lose along the way. You know, they say misery loves company.
Yes.
And it is so evident, very much in both society, but very much in terms of the, I would say, Black community. I celebrate absolutely the successes of people, regardless of who they are. I'm so excited on their behalf when they do. And my friends always say I'm very dramatic and very elaborate. When someone succeeded in something, I remember even back when when our first friend who had gone through university and she qualified as a lawyer.
Yeah.
I'm from West London, good friend of mine. And, you know, my first thing, and you think about it, was I'm going to go and buy it. I bought her a pair. A pair of Prada shades or something.
Right.
You know, that was my sort of thing.
Yeah.
Proud of you, you know, and I, you know, shout it up from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Premier Angels, I was talking about a little bit earlier on. One of the things that we have as well is, we've got a mutual friend, a couple of mutual friends. Part of that group.
Yeah.
And what we loved about meeting together, the first time they all met was on my 40th birthday trips.
Yeah.
And we all were relatively successful in our field. And for the first time, we felt relaxed enough to talk about the successes without feeling conscious about it.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, such a powerful meeting. It wasn't, you know, we were able to talk about without thinking that the other person thinks that we're boasting.
Yeah.
Just we wanted to talk about some successes we've had, but also we wanted to explore from each other.
Yeah. And that's the whole rationale behind doing Phenomenal Woman, because I want to celebrate successes. What I found fantastic is, and we're in the Caribbean, and you'd think you'd see a lot more women of colour being celebrated, but you don't. You know, it's really surreal for me. I don't see it enough, and it's been amazing how many women, how we've networked, how we've been, you know, how phenomenal they've been, for want of a better, you know, to use that word, you know, and the successes they've had. I've heard, you know, female engineers, you know, dermatologists, leaders. It's just such a diverse range, and we need to show much more of that to the women, other women coming up behind us. We need to uplift, because like you say, we've very much keeping it close to our chest, not telling people, you know, what we've done, how well we've done, because we feel there's maybe a little bit of a stigma, because we are being a bit boastful. We are being, you know, who do you think you are? You know, what makes you so great? Forget that. You know, we've worked hard to get where we are. We need to celebrate it and show that those coming behind us, because we won't be here all the time, how to emulate same. So through all that, Karen, what has been the most challenging, satisfying challenge you've had to overcome?
So I guess, you know, sort of building on, you know, sort of after I had my son. You know, I worked through, and as I said, I became that European troubleshooting manager. And then I took the opportunity at that stage. My mum was relocating back to Barbados.
Yes.
And I said, well, I'll come over and I'll help you know, relocate with my siblings. And I went over to Barbados, and I thought, well, you know, I'm dual nationality. Maybe I'll find something here.
Yes.
I looked around. It was very, very difficult. At that particular stage of you know, my time in life, it was about not what you had, but who you knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know that many people in terms of what to get a job. But just before I was leaving, I saw an ad in the paper, and it was for a role with Shell Oil.
Okay.
And at that time, Shell Oil was pretty big in the Caribbean.
Yes, yes.
And had a big presence. And I had a very big presence, and one of the things that I did, so I applied for the role and went through it was a 5-stage process.
Okay.
And it was quite an extensive process, and the final decision was going to be made by the country chairman,
right?
Because they couldn't decide. There was I think there was probably about 8 people involved in the interview process, and
wow.
4 of them were dealing with one of the candidates, and another 4 were dealing with myself. I was then told that, you know, it's come down to, you know, between yourself and this other gentleman. And
yeah.
I knew through someone else that he had, you know, he was in his 40s, he had his degree, and his master's, and I was 26.
Yes.
With just the A-levels kind of thing. And so I thought, well, I, you know, I probably won't get this. But I went in, when I was going in to see the country chairman, the HR director said to me, I just want to let you know that he's pretty punctual. So you have 40 minutes in there with him. And at 39 minutes and 59 seconds,
yeah,
you will be wrapping up your conversation.
Wow.
I just want to make you aware of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, okay, so, you know, you kind of go in a slightly more under pressure knowing that
the clock is ticking, yes.
But I went in and I started to speak to him. And an hour and a half later, I came out of
the room. Wow.
And she just looked at me, she said, that has never happened in the time that I've, you know, worked with this man. And that happened. So I went home, and I'd already, because at that stage I'd already packed my bags to return to the UK, because I didn't think, you know, I was
successful.
And I think it was literally the day before I got the phone call, and she said, you know, we want to offer you the role. And I was like, yeah, I'll take it. She said,
yes.
I don't even know how much it is, and I don't care, I have the role. And interestingly, I probably at that stage, and I'll be really honest with you, did not know the enormity of the role.
Okay.
I remember on the first, you know, just before I was going, coming back over, because I was extended for a couple more days because I was still coming back over to the UK before it started. And I was taken in to see my office. And the office was kitted out in mahogany. You know,
right. Old school office, yeah.
And as the person left me in there, I actually was like, oh my God, this is mine, you know. Because I looked really cool, like I'm used to this thing, sort of thing. And it was then when I was sitting down with one of the project managers, and he said, okay, so just to introduce you to our key clients, so I was going to be the customer services director for the region, so looking after nine islands, and responsible for the very first customer service center in the Caribbean.
Okay.
At that time, you were kind of working with cable and wireless, were in
operation. Right, right.
So they were helping us to install it. And I'll tell you a story about that in a little while.
Yeah.
They then said to me, we've arranged cocktail parties in each of the islands.
There's the Caribbean welcome.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. And the very first one we went to was in Antigua.
Yeah.
It was a rooftop. Restaurant, you know, and me being 26 and being told it's a cocktail party.
Yeah.
I remember in this really nice sort of fitted gold dress, flowing, you know, makeup well done.
Yeah.
And I remember walking onto this, you know, sort of rooftop, and all of our sort of customers were there. There was, you know, the CEO of Scotiabank, there was the minister. This, and you know, as you know, all of this.
Yes.
And, I then saw that the men were holding their tummies in, and the wives were holding their tummy in, because this young, glamorous, riding cross. I mean, I got invited onto yachts, to this.
Yeah.
I guess it was very overwhelming. But yes. I have to say, the second time I went, I wore a black suit rather than my glasses.
Right.
You live in there and you're young.
Yeah.
Surround the space. It was the toughest experience for me.
Okay.
A young, and I'll say woman of colour.
Yeah.
Even though my team were all black within the office. They gave me the hardest time.
Right.
You know, they thought they'd come from England to take
yeah,
even though I'd gone to school there, it was one of those kind of quite strong perceptions.
Yeah.
And the support I got was from the men in the business,
okay.
And I remember one of the operations directors, he came in to see me, and he took me out for lunch, and he said to me, you know, you're young and you're very bright. And he said to me, it was an interesting statement that he said. He said, you're on just on the right side of sexy with your presence.
Okay.
And he said, so, you know, he says in terms of your, he says, you have got it spot on in the way that you dress.
Yes.
And you carry yourself. But be mindful. It was an interesting statement.
Right.
And it was because I was single.
Okay. I can see all the red lights flashing. Yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Caribbean being what it is, there's always lots of rumours and things.
Yeah.
Nobody knows anything about you.
Yeah. Creator. Yeah.
It was a very tough environment for me.
Okay.
Out for 3 years.
Excellent. Well, you survived.
Yeah, and even in that 3 years, I was then I was promoted. And
yeah.
It was an interesting time because they were doing some mergers.
Okay.
Someone needed, you know, of a particular level and above was going to have to reapply for their role.
Okay.
I was one of three that didn't. The kind of global CEO had selected me as one of the people who wanted to have a wider region. So I think it was probably by that time, only 15 or 16 islands in total, that I had the accountability for. And I also was responsible for one of the years where they had the lowest trade debtor that they've had in, you know, in their sort of history as well, in terms of collections and, you know, customer services and things. So that was probably one of my
most tough. So you talked about confidence early on, being confidence. How long, and you know, and I kind of heard sometimes a little bit of a maybe fake it till you make it type of situations. So how big and how much has confidence played, having good confidence played within your career, and how do you regain your confidence when things get tough?
Yeah, so I think my dad has been the one who's instilled the confidence in me. So, you know, starting off on an early journey, he would always say to me that there was only ever to be one man in my life that I was ever to, and that was him.
Yes.
So, you know, he instilled some very good qualities, and my mum's an extremely strong and confident.
Right.
In terms of you want to ask me the question again?
Yes, that's fine. So, well, I can't remember the question. But it's, how big a part has confidence played in your career choices, and how do you regain your confidence when times get tough?
Okay, so in terms of confidence, in terms of what it's played, it has played quite a significant part. I think for me, if I think that I can do, you know, some people say if they think they can do 60% of the job, they'll apply for it.
Yeah.
For me, if I think I can do 40%, then I'll apply for it. And I'll learn the rest. I've got better at listening because I was there before, but I do listen. Active listening now. Again, those are things that, as you know, you learn along
the
way. In terms of being confident, I walk into a room with the knowledge that I think I'm the best person for the role.
I hear that.
When you do feel that way,
then
you're able to articulate it. You're able to give evidence of what you've done.
Yeah.
What you think that you will bring to the table.
Yeah.
I also am very honest about who I am.
Okay.
You know, you go through all of these kind of assessments that you do, and they tell you what sort of personalities you are.
Yes.
And everything.
Yes.
Some
people
are very uncomfortable about, you know, things that you kind of know about yourself, but you don't really want to hear it out loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those types of things I've worked on over the years.
Right.
I never felt before that I could be intimidating, but I damn well know I can be.
Yes.
So it's about using that when I need to, opposed to...
Yes, all the time,
And making sure that you've got that. So I tend to try and make people a bit more comfortable in the room when I'm there.
Okay.
And it's also, sometimes you might think that you know or have all the skills that you need to do a job.
Right.
But I'm better at bringing people in.
Yeah.
I also think that I'm very, because I'm confident about who I am, I don't have any fear about someone in my role.
Yes.
If I've trained up two or three people with good enough strength, it allows me to move on to the next role.
Very much. I think I've always approached every role that I have to actually be working on my successor, so to enable me to move on, because I want to leave a legacy, you know, and if you leave, and if you're strong enough, the legacy will always be there, you know, even with the person, they'll say, oh, that's so-and-so, or so-and-so taught me how to do that, or show me how to do that. So like you say, it's about having the confidence in yourself and not being threatened. And again, that's how we bring more women into the fray.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, you asked the question about, you know, how do you come bounce back?
Yes.
When you're not, your confidence has been knocked. And I think over the years I've had, you know, the knocks, as you can imagine, throughout some of the roles. I've been the only woman on the board. I've been the only colour, you know, on the board, or the only colour in the building. And sometimes, you know, there have been situations where, you know, your confidence has been knocked. I would say that I have a good network. And although my mum would always say that you wouldn't know if I've got a pound or £1 million in my
pocket.
What you see is probably what you see.
Yeah.
In terms of what helps me is I've got my own personal cheerleaders. My son is a fabulous cheerleader for me. In the sense that, you know, I'll come back and I'll, you know, this has happened, etc. And he just says, Mum, but look at the things that you have done.
Yeah.
And sometimes you kind of have a chance to look back and think about that. And I'm probably a lot more humble in terms of things. So if I, rather than me just go back and wallow, I allow myself a 24-hour wallow. That's the maximum.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that you need to have the opportunity to wallow and be upset about something.
Right.
Then I think about, well, what's the plan now? How do I go back in to that environment?
Yeah.
And hold my own?
Yeah.
So if it is that I've got to go in and make an apology.
Yeah.
Then I do that.
Do it. Yeah.
So, you know, I've had a recent incident where we had a client who wasn't right.
Okay.
I've been quite strong in the meeting about what it was.
Okay.
And he felt undermined within the meeting.
Right.
So I took the opportunity to say to him, you know, in no form of fashion was I trying to undermine you. I think because of the stakeholder engagement I'd done previously, we just needed to get to a particular point. And unfortunately, you know, because of some of the comments you were making, I was concerned and nervous that it was going to derail it.
Right.
What I think that we need to do moving forward is that before our sessions, we're very clear. So, our thinking.
Yeah.
But I wanted to take the opportunity to say that if you felt undermined, that wasn't what my intention. So, you know, you are humble within it.
Yes.
Not be defensive. So, I've learned to be a lot less defensive about environments and situations.
Yeah.
So that you come across and people respect you for that.
You touched on something there about having a good network. How important is having a good network, and how do you go about nurturing or pulling that together?
I have to say that I previously never believed in having new friends or new people.
Yeah.
So all of my friends were people I knew for 20, 30 years plus.
Okay.
That has changed significantly in the last 10 years.
Right.
Because I think that when you're at different stages of your life, you need different types of people to complement or support you.
Right.
So I think that for me, in terms of building that network, some of it's about having like-minded people.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes if you have like-minded people, you've not got people to challenge you.
Right.
So I've also got a complement of diverse elements.
Yeah.
Very, very different backgrounds, different ways of thinking, different industries. And you can pull on those different networks, especially as I've been growing the consultancy. It's
very important
to do that. And as I'm reaching out to various different things. Before, I wouldn't ask a question.
Yeah.
Ask people for a view to help me with something. I would always just research it and do it myself.
Right.
What I found is that when you reach out and you build a network, or you reach out to someone who's different, there's something that you wouldn't have thought of, because that's not the way that you think.
Very much.
The way that you operate.
Yeah.
And if you have got someone who's very, very similar to you, they can't. Sometimes they see, because of the similarity, they see where you're going wrong.
Right.
And that's quite an interesting, because they can see the reflection in it, and sometimes it helps them as much as it helps you.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So we're having great conversation here, so, and I've hardly got through any half my questions. So that, no problem though, that's good, that's good, that's good. So Karen, share with us a success quote or mantra that you use, why it's meaningful for you.
Oh, success. I would say for me, it's be the best self that you can be.
Okay.
Because I think that people often compare themselves to others for success. They see what others have, what others do, what others' relationships are like.
Yeah.
And have that view that that's what success is.
Right.
We've all got different opportunities, experiences. We've also got different drivers to what we do.
Yeah.
That's the most important. I remember one of my friends when we were younger saying to me, can't believe it, you know, you're a single parent and you get to travel, you go all of these nice places and do this and etc. And, you know, I can't do that. You know, I'm married, I've got, you know, two kids and I can't do all of those things. And I said to her, when we were at school, tell me what you wanted to do. She said, oh, yeah, I want to get married and have, you know, kids. I said, well, that's reading.
Yeah.
That was what you dreamed of.
Yeah, yeah.
My dream was very different. My dream wasn't to be a single mum with
this. Yeah.
That wasn't my dream. But I wanted, I always was creative, innovative, and I always was interested in travel and exploration. That's what I wanted to be an astronaut. So, you know, that's, there's very different dreams.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely, it's about, you definitely be the best self that you can be.
Yeah.
Because that's who you've got control over. You have no control over anything else.
Yeah. And that's your competition. You are your competition, not anybody else, because especially in this age, and I know people go on about it, we sound a bit old, but with social media and stuff like that, it's a facade. Half the time it is a facade because people are creating what the perception they want you to have of them. It's not necessarily real. So like you say, be the best you can be. Look to yourself and guide yourself there.
Absolutely. And we take it, you know, don't get me wrong, I take advantage of the social media platforms.
Yes, yes.
You know, they're there and you use them in various different ways. You've got your private ones, you've got your business ones.
Yeah.
You know, and you are, because it's about an experience and a dream, you're helping people to realise that.
So Karen, looking back, what advice would you give to your teenage self? I know you said you're a little bit rebellious, but what advice would you give your teenage self?
Well, when I say rebellious, I was one of these sort of very quiet rebellious ones.
In right. The sense, but those are the deadly ones.
Yeah. I on the surface, I was absolutely very good.
Right.
So I didn't very rarely fell out with, you know, parents or anything like that, or... You know, I would be home on time, all of that.
Yeah.
What I would say to my teenage self is, don't sweat it, you make it.
Nice. And if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
Oh, Michelle Obama.
Okay, Michelle comes highly recommended. And why Michelle?
Why Michelle? I think that she stays true to who she is.
Yes.
So even through all of that, and you know, now that she's come out of the White House, she talks about you know, the racism she experienced, the challenges she experienced, you know, some of the derogatory things that you see.
Yeah.
But she stayed regal.
Yeah.
She stayed. I every time I see and I hear her speak, I get goose pimples, and I'm one that personally hasn't taken a mentor. I haven't taken one because of who I am, because of the type of personality that I am.
Yeah.
If you're given the opportunity, I'd be sitting right next to Michelle.
Fantastic. And Karen, what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
I'm more powerful than I think I am.
Excellent.
Um, I'm a good, I would say a good leader.
Okay.
And that I can learn a lot from others.
Excellent. 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 Always learning. Always learning. So what would you say are your imperfections and how do you embrace them?
So I can get obsessive about a particular subject.
Yes.
So when before getting married, and before my husband, I've known my husband now for 23 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a whole new show, so we won't go
right,
into that.
Right, okay, cool.
When we decided we were going to get married, I watched every single wedding show and I bought...
Oh, my gosh.
then I moved, you know, then when we bought some land and we were going to build, I, you know, watched every show, had every book, you know, with every... So when it comes to... I am dogged when it comes to a subject.
Yeah.
So if I have an interest in something, then... And be quite bloody minded about getting it done.
Right.
I'm extremely spontaneous.
Okay.
It can be both a positive and a negative. So the positive is that, you know, it means that you live your life the way that you want.
Yeah.
Negative is sometimes you don't always think about the consequences.
Okay. has there been a time where your spontaneity has got you into some trouble you shouldn't have got into?
Well, yeah, I would say probably. I would say yes. I lived in the moment.
Yeah.
And yes, but I always turn it around in the end.
Of course. That's what we have to do. I keep saying, let's have the MacGyver method. Let's find, see, let's turn it into something. Let's create something. You know, there's nothing wrong. This is a spontaneity at its best. So Karen, what's your definition of success? I know we touched on it a bit earlier, but what's your definition of success?
My definition of success is doing what you want to do.
Okay.
And doing it well.
Okay. Okay.
Because I think that we all have the opportunity. I think the majority of people have the opportunity. What it is whether or not we take it.
Right, right.
And sometimes people are sitting waiting for things to come to them.
Yeah.
We have to sometimes go and put ourselves out there. And also taking risks.
Yes.
You know, so I'm not saying... I would, you know, a lot of people I say don't take the type of risk that I take.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was buying my second house that I went to, you know, I'd gone through the process and I was waiting because it was taking like a long time for about 9 months for the whole process. By that time, I had chosen to leave the job that I was in.
Okay.
So when it came through, I didn't actually have a job.
Yeah.
Within 4 weeks of me moving in.
Right, you had one.
I didn't have one.
Yeah.
But for most people, they wouldn't take that kind of risk.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, I need to make sure I've got the income coming in and, you know, whatever the case.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I think
it's those types of risks.
Okay. Calculated risks.
You know, that you can take. And so success is whatever makes you happy.
Excellent.
And I think you've got to be passionate about what it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
I know for me, I couldn't go back to being anyone's employee. That doesn't work for me, but for others, that works well.
Yes.
So it is just about doing what makes you happy. And because you were a long time, as they say, a long time dead.
Dead, long time dead, yes. Yes.
So, you know, take the opportunities. We've had a lot of bereavement in our family recently. My grandmother passed away this week alone.
Right. And
she was 94.
Okay.
She lived.
Yeah.
I mean, she really lived. She travelled. You know, often you'd call and say, where are you going, Grant? Oh, I'm just off to Jerusalem. Oh, I'm off to Canada.
Okay.
And up in, you know, she travelled up to about 3 or 4 years ago. She was still travelling. Her mind was still travelling.
Yes, yes.
When I spoke to her, she'd be, I want to go to Barbados, I want to go to here.
Yeah.
And I think success is, if you can write on your tombstone,
yeah,
I lived the way I wanted to.
Excellent. Yeah,
I think it's
success. Yeah,
whatever
yeah. It is. And lastly, Karen, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
I think after, on the day of my graduation,
yeah,
Dad asked me, "How do you feel?"
Yeah,
and I said, "I feel content." And I'm actually very proud of who I am.
Yeah.
I've been through, but also what it's empowered me to do. Okay. So I'm in a position to help others.
Yes.
And every time I succeed or every time I secure a large contract, right. Don't think about what can I spend it on for me.
Yeah.
I think, oh my God, who else can I help now?
Oh.
So for me, being my own hero is the ability to quietly help others, because it doesn't have to be out.
Yes. Yeah.
But being in a position to be able to do so, and whether or not that's by offering people work, being able to give them money, giving opportunities, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's what it means to me.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. That was great. That's a fantastic conversation. If our listeners want to get hold of you or get in touch with you about the work you're doing, how can they do that?
Okay, so best email address to probably get KTR, so that's K for Kilo, T for Tango, R for Romeo, at premierchange.com. If you contact me on that, then any of our businesses, whether it be the Flexi Bench, whether it's Premier Change, or whether it's Premier Angels, or even whether or not it's a soft day pack paradise, I could, you know, I will always respond to you via that
forum. That's excellent. And I'll make sure all your contact details go in the show notes as well. So Karen, all that remains for me to say is thank you so much for your time this morning. I know this morning here, it's afternoon for you there. Thank you so much for your time today, and we'll speak soon.
Definitely. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And that was Karen. I hope you really enjoyed that interview as much as I did. She had some great things to say. And one of the things that really stood out for me there was defining your own success. And don't look to other people as to what they're doing or, you know, to what you want to achieve. Make your own, define what your success criteria is and work towards that. So great piece of information, inspiring information there from Karen. Now, as ever, I thank you for listening into the podcast each week. And again, if the tips and interviews we share in each episode have helped you grow in confidence and inspired you to improve your future, head over to iTunes and subscribe to the show and leave your review and let me know what you think of the show. And follow me if you like what you hear. Follow me for your weekly dose of clarity, courage and confidence on Facebook as I am Janice Sutherland, so you can live the life you deserve. Until next time.